today is your first day as an official member of the Republican House Caucus. Just give me your thoughts on this day, and especially you are among one of two women who've made history in the state by being the first two to serve Alabama on Capitol Hill. So give me your thoughts on this day.
It's a very exciting day for Alabama and for the 2nd District to return this seat, you know, back to a Republican conservative seat. But more importantly than that, it's a great day for our country. We have an opportunity now to start to get our country back on track, repeal this job-killing legislation. And I am thrilled to have my family and supporters here around me on this very, very important day. But more important than that, I am ready to get to work, roll my sleeves up, be the best congressman that I can be for the people who live and work in Alabama's 2nd District.
Well, that is the perfect segue to my next question, which is, one, what are the priorities of the Republican House Caucus? And two, what are your personal priorities based on your conversations with your constituents?
Sure. Well, we received a mandate from the American people. They want a smaller government. They want lower taxes. They want to see us get our fiscal house in order, just like Americans do all over this country every day. They don't spend more money than they make, neither should the federal government. And I think I pointed you before to the Pledge of America, which is a governing document. I would really strongly encourage anyone who hasn't read that to go to that. That is what this House leadership is focusing on as we, you know, work to move our country forward, get our country back on track, focus on our Constitution and the principles that is laid out in our Constitution.
And can you share with us a couple of things in that pledge that you will want people to really take a close look at?
Sure. Today, I'm happy to tell you that I will support the House Rules Package. In that package, there is that legislation state the constitutionality in every piece of legislation. The text of it must contain a provision that explains where in the Constitution Congress has the authority to address the issue in the first place. I think that's very, very important. Also, one of the things we've talked about, or I've talked about for the past year and a half, is transparency and accountability. And this rules package that will be adopted today does just that. It supports transparency and accountability throughout this Congress. And, you know, I'm also a original co-sponsor of a balanced budget amendment. And I'm really excited to be a part of that legislation, basically requiring that we don't spend more money than we bring in. And that is so important because that's what you and I do in our house every day. The government should be required to do the same.
Well, I know the city of Montgomery is going to hold a special election to find your replacement on the city council. What are your words to whoever replaces you in that position?
Well, I would just say, and again, remember, I'm still a resident of District 7, so I look forward to voting in that election myself. But it's just important, just like it is, you know, here on the federal level, what I know to be true, and it doesn't change whether you're on the city council or you're in Congress, people want to see and touch and feel their representative. They want to know that the person that is speaking for them in that council chamber or in the House chamber is well aware of and in touch with what the issues are facing the people they represent. And the way you stay in touch with the people you represent is to be with them and to listen to them. And so, you know, my hope is that whoever is elected to the city council seat for District 7 in Montgomery will always work hard to listen to their constituents and then respond to the constituents. That's the number one job. And we need a clean, safe city to live. And so as those individuals that are running move through their campaign, it's my hope that they will focus, and then once whoever is elected will lead, will stay focused on a clean, safe city to live. That's so very important for all of us when it comes to economic development and just our day-to-day lives.
Well, like you said, you are a resident of Montgomery. You're a wife and a mom. You have family and friends here. Will it be difficult being away from them?
Well, of course. You know, there are sacrifices that certainly come with this job, but my husband and I are, of course, committed to one another and to our children. And we have family all around us, a wonderful support system. Like I said, we're going to stay in Montgomery, and I'll be on a plane back and forth to Washington. But, again, we have a tremendous support system. Certainly it will be difficult, but, you know, the reason that I got into this in the first place was for my children. My husband and I, feel very convicted that this is where God would have us serve, so that this country, so we can play a small part in making sure that this country looks the same for our children as it has for all of those who've gone before.
Well, Ms. Roby, I don't want to hold you any longer than the time I committed. So I just want to get any final thoughts on your being there today in this new journey and step in your life and for the people you represent in District 2.
Sure. I would just say I am so grateful. I am so thankful for the opportunity to serve my country, to serve Alabamians, to serve the 2nd District. And again, I look forward to working for you. It is my job to be available to you to make sure that we get the work done that we do, that we need to, in order for us to get our country back on track and Alabama to be the best state that we can be.
Driven by court rulings and actions of the governor's anti-gambling task force, Jerry Massey testified he lobbied intensely for passage of the bingo bill. The 13-year lobbyist said his contract with casino owner Ronnie Gilley had incentives related to gaming if the bill passed, and it would be a big victory for his firm, referring to it as a big carrot. Massey has pled guilty in the federal bingo corruption trial to offering bribes to lawmakers for their yes votes on the legislation. I'm Karen Brown, WVAS News. Every state entity felt the crunch of the budget shortfall.
That's right.
And you talk with us a lot about the impact this will have on the general public. Circuit courts are considering, I know Montgomery County definitely is, the four-day work weeks. The stockpile of cases. I really don't want to rehash that portion so much, but what do you want to see happen maybe next session? What can the public do to help lawmakers understand the need to really fund the courts and find alternative means, whether it's increasing their tobacco tax or something, to help adequately fund the court system?
Well, Alabama, all of the states except for a few energy-producing states like North Dakota and Montana and some other energy-producing states, all the states suffered a significant depletion of resources because of the stimulus package that those monies were spent. That's really what propped up state governments up throughout the nation, and it was a good thing. That money's over, and so now the states, but the economy's a little better, back on the road to recovery. The private sector had suffered. Now the public sector is suffering. But the public sector impacts every citizen, because it's our services that the citizens, you know, need, desperately need, and impacts our quality of life, you know. Other states created revenue. You know, they raised court costs. They raised taxes. I mean, they did cost savings, as we have done here with the legislature this year, but they also raised revenue. Our cost of court are already out the roof, and it's already an access to justice issue because our court costs are so high. And the legislature was unwilling to create a revenue measure. That revenue measure is desperately needed, whether it's a tobacco tax or a examining the corporate loopholes. Those bills did not pass. I mean, there's other things that can be done to create revenue, and it's got to be done, and the public has got to express their opinion on that subject, because Alabama is an extremely low-taxed state. To be taxed like Mississippi, we would have to raise $800 million just to be taxed at the same rate as Mississippi, which is also a low tax, state tax. And the people have got to examine what essential services are and make sure that those essential services are funded. Department of Public Safety, Department of Human Resources, Mental Health, Department of Corrections. Our Department of Corrections is the least funded DOC in the nation. You can double our per diem per inmate and it doesn't reach the national average. If we funded our prison system like Arizona or other states, it would be over 50% of our general fund. Right now it's only 20% of our general fund. So the people, for instance, have got to answer the question, do they want to pay more tax in order to lock up nonviolent offenders? I believe the answer is going to be no. But I do think that they would look at a reasonable revenue measure, knowing it's going for vital services that protect abused and neglected children, you know, public health, Medicaid, and the courts. And the courts certainly are an essential function of government. You have civilized society for one reason and one reason only, and that's because of the court system and the rule of law.
If you could handpick your successor, what characteristics would you like for that person to bring to the court?
I really believe that Governor Bentley is going to appoint my replacement, and that person is going to be outstanding. He has already assured me that it will be somebody with trial court experience. I think that, more than anything else, is absolutely essential because Alabama has a unified judicial system, one of 15 states that has a unified trial court system. And the Chief Justice has the management and administration of the entire trial court system. It is essential that that person understand and appreciate the role of the trial courts because that's where the hard work is done. You know, if you look at the Court of Criminal Appeals and the Court of Civil Appeals and the appellate courts, the cases that we get, even though some of them are extremely high-profile cases, there are just a minuscule portion of the hundreds of thousands of cases and decisions that are being made in our 67 counties. So understanding the trial courts and is going to be essential. Also working with the legislature, I really hope and pray that the governor will pick somebody that can work well with the legislature on the budget. I'm hoping that they'll be able to do a significantly better job than I've done. I've done everything I know to do to fund the courts and make sure that the courts would be funded. We've saved money. We've slashed and slashed and slashed. But we literally are down to the bone. There's nothing else to cut but people because we really are just people. And I sincerely hope that that person will work on access to justice issues. We began an access to justice commission my first year as Chief Justice to be able to improve the access to the courts and look at issues that hinder people from coming into the courts, and that's on civil cases. And, you know, a lot of it doesn't have to do with poverty issues, even though the working poor, which they probably don't even think of themselves as poor, but they still can't afford, you know, divorce, come back into court for child custody issues or visitation issues or child support or something of that issue, maybe landlord-tenant problem. But it's also an issue for folks that actually have money because they may have been a fender bender or have a contract issue with someone, and if they go to a lawyer, the lawyer's going to charge them basically how much they would recover. And it's not, you know, it doesn't make sense. It's not practical. Mm-hmm. So those access issues also really, really impact everyone. And so I really hope that that will be another significant concern. Judicial conduct. I've been very concerned about any misconduct on the part of judges. I would earnestly have hoped that I could have convinced the Supreme Court to change the rule to allow confidential and even anonymous complaints on judges' misconduct. And I was unable to accomplish that. I hope that the next Chief Justice will be more successful on that issue as well.
Final question. You seem so at peace with your decision. I'm watching your facial expressions and your mannerisms. When you don't know, you're often concerned, is she going to be okay? You know, I've heard that a lot. But you seem so at peace with your decision. Mm-hmm. What's your final thoughts on leaving the Alabama court system?
Well, it's been a tremendous honor. If you had told me a little girl from Evergreen, Alabama, a district judge in Conecuh County, could end up her judicial career as Chief Justice, I would have laughed out loud. You know, I mean, I never in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine that I would be in this place. I prayed myself into this job, and I have prayed myself out of it. And one of my dear friends, who's a former director of public safety, shared with me, and it really is a very... it really captures why I'm in such peace, is my friend Colonel Chris Murphy said that his his father, who is a priest, Episcopalian priest, said that when a Christian makes a difficult decision prayerfully, so enters a decision with much prayer, that they cannot go wrong. That if it's the right decision, the Lord will bless it. If it's the wrong decision, the Lord will redeem it. So it truly has, it's that kind of support that I've received, and the peace that I have, that I truly know that Governor Bentley is going to pick somebody fine, and that person will do an exemplary job. And that makes it easier for me, knowing, you know, that Governor Bentley really cares about this appointment and is in earnest about doing the right thing. And more than anything else, that has given me great peace.